My name is Amy Trail. I'm a New Orleanian of 12 years, but I'm originally from Idaho. The very first time I came to New Orleans was Millennium New Year's Eve. We drove all the way from Idaho. It was a 36-hour drive, and in like a Pontiac Sunfire with three of my friends. And New Orleans had kind of always held a strange mystique for me, even though I'd never been here. I think it does for a lot of people. Very first night I came to New Orleans, we went to Le Bon Temps Roulé on Magazine Street, and Kermit Ruffins was playing. And he asked the audience if anybody wanted to sit in, and of course I immediately raised my hand, and I sat in, you know, with Kermit Ruffins the very first night I was ever in New Orleans. So I'm like, you know, this is a cool place. I might want to think about living here. So tell
me about the new record you have out.
Well, my new record is a record called Cold Springs, and it's a tribute to my home state of Idaho. Over the years of 2010 to 2012, both my grandparents on my mother's side passed away, as did my father. So I was up there back and forth from New Orleans to Idaho probably about 7 or 8 times in a span of a year and a half, just kind of, you know, paying last respects, going to funerals, taking care of loose ends. And while I was up there, I had the idea of creating an album that was a tribute to Idaho, because Idaho is one of those states that not a lot of people even realize where it is. You being from California, I'm sure know where it is, but most people think it's in the Midwest, and most people don't really know a lot about it. You know, they know potatoes, and that's about it. So I wanted to do an album that paid tribute to the beauty and the openness of the landscape, and also paid tribute individually to my family. And the name Cold Springs was taken from the original homestead that my great-great-grandparents founded in Idaho, a cattle ranch in the middle of the Idaho desert, Cold Springs. So it's a very meaningful album to me, and I think it's some of my best work, my strongest work, and I really tried to capture the sonic quality of Idaho on this album by, you know, lots of open space you know, the musical representation of, you know, horizon lines and mountains and deserts and, you know, all those great components of what makes Idaho awesome.
Now, a lot of locals might not be familiar with your music because you spend a lot of your time as one of the regular pianists at Pat O'Brien's. How long have you been working there for?
I got the job at Pat O'Brien's the summer after I graduated from UNO. And so I've been working there for about 9 years, and it's a great, interesting, weird, bizarre job. And it keeps me occupied. It's a full-time position, so I'm playing, you know, it's funny because we were talking about this earlier, even though I'm playing 4 or 5 nights a week in New Orleans, no one knows that I'm playing, you know, because it's a tourist bar, you know, it's a place where tourists come to hear Margaritaville and Brown Eyed Girl and, you know, all those great classics of American songwriting. but the cool part about the job is that it's a completely request show. So anybody can write down any song ever at any time. So the repertoire that we have to learn is literally thousands and thousands of songs. You know, we do songs from every genre, country, rock, pop, old pop, new pop, jazz, R&B, soul. We do every genre, every decade, every artist. So it's pretty much a good songwriting education.
I've kind of always been interested to talk to someone who plays piano at a place like Pat O'Brien's, because I just can't imagine how many songs you must have to keep in your head. I mean, I imagine when you got the job, you just had to sit down and learn all these thousands of songs.
Yes, that's exactly what we had to do, because I came from, you know, a jazz background and a very, you know, musically studious kind of background, and also a songwriting background of just my own songs. So when I first got the position there, yes, you had to sit down and just learn hundreds and hundreds of songs. And I worked with another piano player, Victoria Amato. She was kind of instrumental in helping me learn, or helping me learn the gig and realizing what it entailed. And, you know, the first couple of times I met with her, it was like, okay, you know, I want you to go home this week and learn 20 songs. And when you come back next week, I want you to learn 20 more, you know? So at first it was, at first it's absolutely daunting, and you just don't think that there's any way you can ever get the repertoire under your belt. However, 75% of the requests that we get are repeated requests, like a top, you know, 100 or 200, you know, we call them our A songs, which are songs that the audience requests over and over and over again. So once you learn that basic repertoire, then you can kind of build out. And the building out never really stops, ever. You know, we are constantly all learning new songs, you know. These days, the big hit is Blurred Lines. We're playing that left and right, you know, and I'm sure Lady Gaga has a new song out. I'm sure we're all going to have to learn that, you know.
What are the absolute most requested songs that you get? Give me, like, the top five.
The biggest request we get is Sweet Caroline by Neil.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, I guess that tells you something about your clientele there.
Yes. But, you know, young kids request it, too. It's just, I think it's because it's an interactive song, and the big chorus with the horn lick, bum, 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 you know, is a great thing for drunk people to sing. And they all know the lyrics to the whole thing. And I have no idea how that song became so huge, but Sweet Caroline is probably our number one request. And of course, Piano Man, Brown Eyed Girl, American Pie. And then it kind of gets, it's kind of like a tie between like 10 or 15 songs, you know, I'd say like Margaritaville or Great Balls of Fire.
Do you play the entirety of American Pie, or do you have an abridged version?
Abridged. Everything we do is abridged, because we kind of have to keep our songs within like a 2-3 minute time limit. So, and plus, like, you know, when you're dealing with people who are, you know, high on alcohol, the attention span isn't really there, so you can kind of get away with leaving out, omitting, you know, 3 or 4 verses of a song that you've played 50 times that week, you know. So it's kind of funny. Sometimes people do get mad if they notice that we've cut some songs out. Then we just apologize and say, I'm sorry, that's just what we do here. If you'd like to make another request, we'll do you one for free, you know.
Do you ever get to play outside of New Orleans? Or
Very rarely. Like I said, my job at Pat O'Brien's keeps me pretty occupied. I had actually wanted to do a Northwestern tour this summer, but then I got knocked up in January. My husband and I found out that I was expecting, so, you know, here I am. I know that people listening to this won't be able to see, but I'm actually 8 months pregnant.
I can verify.
Zachary verified. So, yeah, so the touring in a hot car all, you know, summer long was something that quickly became unappealing.
Do you have any particular memories of performing in your early days in New Orleans that stick out for you? And you used to play in more clubs around town.
Well, right? When I was in college, I used to play on Frenchman Street like all the time. We had 2 house gigs, one at the now defunct Cafe Brazil, and I also used to play at the Apple Barrel a lot. And I can't really think of like one, like they all kind of meld together after a while. Mm-hmm. But I remember, you know, just playing those gigs and, you know, playing a 3-hour gig and taking home $50, you know, and just like the bizarre people who would come through there. And I remember one night we were playing and this group of guys came in and they gave us a $100 tip. And it was as if like they were our new Jesus Christ, you know, because we were all so poor. And, you know, I really empathize for what musicians go through down here in New Orleans, because even though there's a billion places to play, it's still really hard to eke out a living. And, you know, I've kind of, over the years, you know, sometimes regretted doing the really commercial gig, but then, you know, I hear about my friends' gigs where they cart all this music in, and they play for 3 or 4 hours, and they go home with $30, you know, and it's just, I really empathize for what musicians go through in the city, even though in comparison, you know, this is a great place for a musician because there are so many gigs, and in the rest of America, it's not that way. But one time we were playing at Bank Street Bar. Uh-huh. I do have this is a funny story. We were playing at Bank Street Bar, and
well, we have a piano in front of us here.
Once a month.
Do you think you'd be able to play a song?
Really, just like there's this guy who was a frequent customer of Bank Street Bar, which is putting it very politely. He was a drunk, and he came in. And he was out. He'd always be like getting too close to the band, and like you never knew if he was going to fall over your equipment or throw up all over your equipment or you know. Whatever. And so, you know, of course, being the plucky person I am, he was standing over at the bar and we decided to sing happy birthday to him, even though it wasn't his birthday. And I didn't know his name, so I sang happy birthday to the drunk guy at the bar. And he swung around and he was just livid and he started coming at me. And so the guys in the band basically had to like rein him in, and the bartender, bless her heart, jumped over the bar and like drug him out by the collar and you know that was the last time I messed with unstable drunk people in New Orleans, you know, that blatantly. At least I do it all the time, you know, at work. But I try to keep it on the subtle level, you know, a wink wink level instead of a blatant, you know, FU level. So
well, we have a piano in front of us here. Do you think you'd be able to play a song?
Absolutely. I was thinking about doing There Ain't Nothing There. It's a song that I wrote when I was traveling through the high desert of southern Idaho, basically from Twin Falls to back to Boise, Idaho, our capital. And I was looking out across the desert and thinking and reflecting upon the fact that my father was dying at the time. And so the song is really kind of the subject matter of the song is twofold. It's about how there is this great, vast openness to Idaho. There ain't nothing there. And also about how at this time of my life, a lot of touchstones of my childhood were fading away, including my own father. So that's the other part of the dual subject matter, is that it was talking about how when you go back to your home, your place of birth, after a number of years, it's not the same. You know, in my case, there ain't nothing there. My dad wasn't there anymore, and my grandparents weren't there anymore. And also just the landscape of Idaho is so stark and, you know, hauntingly beautiful. So that's how that song came about. First song on the album.
Summers were short, winters were long. Grandma made sure we knew right from wrong. Brother would let me tag along. I tried to be big, I tried to be strong. Daddy was fat, Mama was lean. All I did was dream. There ain't nothing there, a whole lot of nothing there. There ain't from Pocatello up to Mountain Home. Even though it's here, I feel all alone. Desert boy with a heart of stone. No sense fooling with a vagabond. Gotta be tough, never give up. Hold on tight, this is gonna get rough. Idaho gal can't take a hit. May hurt for a bit. There ain't nothing there, a whole lot of nothing there. There ain't nothing there, a whole lot of nothing there. There ain't nothing there, a whole lot of nothing there. There ain't nothing there, a whole lot of nothing. Thank you. when everybody knew everybody around. Winter's short, the summer's long. My father, my grandma, my grandpa passed on. There ain't nothing there, whole lot of nothing there. There ain't nothing there, whole lot of nothing there. There ain't nothing there, whole lot of nothing there. There ain't nothing there, whole lot of nothing there.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
And when did you write that song?
I wrote that, in probably like December of 2011. Yeah.
Well, the record's called Cold Springs.
Mm-hmm.
Amy Trail. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you, Zachary. Appreciate it.